This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller. There is an art to business, and though you may not realize it, that art in the form of logos probably affects you every single day. So think about all the logos that you could identify without any letters or words to help you out. Apple, maybe, Nike, Starbucks, Playboy, Mercedes. But as the economy changes, logos are also undergoing a radical shift. Why and just how important are these sort of unheralded pieces of art? I'm joined by two experts on the topic, Michael McPherson, creative director, and Andrea Nadeff, a partner both at Corey McPherson Nash, which is a national branding and design firm. Andrea and Michael, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start with a logo that most people see every single day. In fact, some people visit the stores every single day. It's Starbucks. We all know it. Andrea, what has been happening to the Starbucks logo and why?
Well, the biggest news with the Starbucks logo is it dropped its name. So when they revivified the logo and the brand, the big news was they dropped the name Starbucks. They redesigned the mermaid, also called the siren, to be much more modern and clean and kind of coming out of the circle. So she's more simple and breaking through boundaries to explain and enter Starbucks into more products and services rather than just coffee.
So, okay. So first of all, why drop the name Starbucks? I don't know how many people listening are thinking about whether they have seen the word Starbucks actually used on their coffee cups on the stores, but why drop the name and just keep the mermaid?
Well, it's very interesting because if you just step back and look at what's been going on with redesign of logos in the past 12 to 18 months, Twitter redesigned its logo, dropped the name, what we call the bubble typeface, double typeface, drop the T, and just redesign the bird to be much more simple. So, and Domino's Pizza, redesign, drop the pizza. Oftentimes what this means is it's a call that we are simplifying, paring down, but also entering new markets. And we want you to think of us in the way that you think of us, but we also want you to extend that equity into other areas.
And where is Starbucks trying to expand its brand beyond coffee?
Well, for a very, very long time, and this is just the DNA and the ethos of the brand and the spirit and Howard Schultz, it's coffee, it was music, it's ice cream, it's concept stores for liquor, spirits, beer, it's going all green in its environment. They clearly want to have their passionate consumer not only drink their coffee, but live and experience their brand online, on land, through a mobile phone, in a physical environment.
Michael McPherson, this is fascinating that companies are dropping their names. And I'm actually going to play you a commercial here. This is a bit of a 2012 Nike commercial. And Nike was really on the vanguard here. This is a commercial about female athletes. And importantly, in this entire commercial, it never mentions or displays the word Nike. The only thing you get is the swoosh. Let's listen. I think we've got it. Let's see, do we have the Nike?
When I was growing up, girls just didn't run in public.
No one on my all-boys team would pass to me.
Dad told me I couldn't be a boxer. He said I was too small.
There was a guy who tried to spit on me and then push me out of his way.
There comes a point where you have to be sure of yourself. People aren't used to women being so passionate. It scares them.
One day, I just said it doesn't matter what other people think.
I'm a fashion model who can dunk.
I'm a girl. That doesn't mean I have to wear a skirt.
Michael McPherson, what had happened with Nike and what's the trend here?
Well, I think, the trend is only allowed by a company that has been promoting their brand for 15 or 20 years. They've achieved such enormous equity, not only in terms of the visual, the swoosh and the name, but also in terms of the just do it ethos. It's what we call a ruggedness brand. It's a brand that defines itself around toughness, around endurance, around persistence, around tenacity. And I think that branding is bigger than the logo. It's bigger than the name. The logo serves to communicate and symbolize an enormous cultural paradigm that is developed in non-visual ways as well as through sound and sight.
And what's the advantage for Nike of getting rid of the N-I-K-E? Is it a coolness factor? What are they doing there in getting rid of that name?
Well, I don't really know what the strategy is. I know that the first time I saw the word, I didn't know how to pronounce it, so it could be it. But I think it is a coolness factor. I think it is we're so famous, we're so iconic, we don't really need our name. There was also a sort of a Nike oversaturation with the swoosh and the name. For a while, they actually withdrew the swoosh from circulation in order to promote themselves and brand themselves in other ways.
Interesting. So I wonder, too, how does Nike becoming an international company, and you could say the same thing about Starbucks, how does that factor in here? Is there an advantage to not having to translate a word?
That could be it. I mean, Nike's originally a Greek word that means victory. But I think that the shape of the word is one of the most recognizable features. There was a study actually several years ago when they were doing signage for airports. They found that instead of using universal symbols for example, men and women, it was more recognizable to see the word shape. Even though people didn't know what the meaning was, just the abstract form was more universally recognizable than the particular shape, which varies from culture to culture.
Interesting. Andrea Ndef, what are we seeing, do you think, in terms of the internationalization of companies and how that affects the logos, the art that they want to put out there?
Well, it's really interesting because if you step back and you just look at what's going on in social media and in digital, and when consumers, whether they're at work or at home, are interfacing with a logo, which is part of a brand, they're interfacing it online or on a smartphone or on a laptop. So what it means is that their experience is through that digital medium, which necessitates a pared-down, simplified look, very minimal logo in that you're often looking at just a letter or a symbol or a shape, and a lot of emphasis on color. Now, an often cited statistic is that color aids in brand recall somewhere up to 80%. So what you see in a lot of these international brands is a big reliance on color. And you have the same old brands, you know, the Coca-Cola, the H&M, the Campbell's Soup, but you also have a lot of kind of upstarts branding around these very bold colors. And some of these colors work really well in Europe and globally, and some of them have negative significance here.
Okay, so give me an example of a color that means one thing in one country, perhaps, but a different thing in a different country.
You know, a well-known color is red, right? So on one hand, red is love, passion. In Europe, red can be alarm, stop, danger, or take note, pay attention. There's something important going on here. Green is another well-known example. Green is nature. Lighter green, it's growth. It's warm and friendly. Darker green is more financial services. But what you're seeing today with these internet banks and internet financial services is a shift from that old color baggage into a purple burgundy for Ally Bank or, you know, the well-known orange for ING.
Michael McPherson, let's talk about a brand that not just is maybe setting the standard for how you brand, but is also affecting other brands. That's Apple. And I've got a little bit of a very recent iPhone commercial for the iPhone 5, which never mentions or displays the word Apple. The only thing you get is the apple with the bite out of it that so many people know right at the end. So let's listen to that commercial.
There are laws to physics, right? So explain this. How can something get bigger and smaller? there's more of it and less of it? Well, I guess the laws of physics are more like general guidelines.
Michael McPherson, when you look at the way that Apple brands their products, what do you think of it?
Well, Apple, it's almost set a standard that is unachievable. I can't tell you how many meetings have started out by people saying when they wanted to redesign their website or redesign their logo or redesign their look and feel of their materials that they wanted it to be modeled on Apple. And I think it really comes down to simplicity. Apple has done a masterful job of taking away, and paring down until what's left is just simple elegance. It'll be extremely interesting to see how sustainable that is without the fiery vision of Steve Jobs, basically being the design director as well as the marketer and visionary behind Apple.
It's interesting, though, because they put out these products, many of which don't have the word Apple on them. It's just nowhere to be found. And yet, everybody knows that what that person is holding is an iPhone, is an iPad. Talk to you about what's the effect of everybody using iPhones and iPads, or many people increasingly using mobile devices to access brands. How does that change how you, as a designer of a logo, design a logo?
Well, for one thing, it used to be a standard for designing logos that it had to be really look good in black and white, because you were imagining the worst-case scenario, or it was coming through a fax machine. Remember those?
Or is it a newspaper, right?
Right. So the fact that you have this enormous color palette, you have an enormous subtle palette of gradation that's available to you. You have the ability to overlap colors. You're no longer restricted by the black and white world of print. It's a huge, huge impact on design. The other thing that has really been enormously important is the tools that are available to designers. You used to never see shapes that required enormous modeling through 3D. And nowadays, a lot of the new logos that are coming out are, you have shape of a pretzel, or you have the shape of a sphere with chunks cut out of it, or you have this potato chip shape or a Moebius strip. That's all very doable with 3D modeling software, and that used to be create insurmountable problems for somebody working with a bottle of ink and a straight edge.
So give me an example of a logo that somebody might see today that probably would not have been what it is were the logo designer still designing for the fax machine and the newspaper.
I think the Apple logo itself, the way you usually see it is with this sort of glossy, bulbous glow to it, as if it's made out of some kind of combination of water and plastic, the way it reflects light, the way it gradates from light to dark. That's pretty much impossible 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. So that begins to exemplify. I mean, the simplest app on your iPhone or on your smartphone is pretty much unattainable 5 years ago.
And I should say, it's amazing how popular logos are. In fact, there's a very popular iPhone app that kids can now test how well they know logos. And it has really caught on. We actually have a version of a logo quiz at our website. So if you visit wgbhnews.org and you visit Boston Public Radio's homepage, you can take that to test how well you can identify logos without any words or letters attached. But Andrea Nadeff, let's talk about a logo that bombed. And that was the Gap logo. In 2010, they thought, forget this old 1960s logo. We're going to redesign this thing. What happened?
The crowdsourcing of the logo. So it's very interesting. And I would be remiss in our profession if we didn't talk about a logo is not just a logo. It's so much more. So brand is both the physical and the mental. The physical part is the logo and the color, and the mental is the what I think of when I think of. So what Gap did was they pulled their audience of consumers all over and crowdsourced a logo and got the logo that was most, you know, got the highest accolades and got rid of their iconic blue and their old typeface and went to black and I believe it was a Helvetica typeface. So it lost all its personality and it came out as a disaster. And then the founder had to come out and do a mea culpa, completely the other way that the new Starbucks logo was reintroduced. So I think the other point about that is that a redesign has to be based in strategy. It can't be based in subjective reaction. It has to be based in business strategy and rationale and product development.
And you see that too with Coca-Cola. People fall in love with tradition. So you there has to be very often some carryover, right, from the way things used to be.
Absolutely. That's the legacy part.
And yeah, go ahead.
People don't like change. That's what, you know, that's, you hear that all the time with redesigns. Even, you know, a lot of us aren't privy to the strategy behind a redesign, but people often, they don't like change. They get very accustomed to what they see and the nostalgia behind it.
Go ahead. There's also the issue of changing for the sake of change. I mean, I think one of my proudest moments as a designer is talking HBO out of redesigning their logo. They hired us to do a sort of a brand analysis, and they had a new marketing person in there that really wanted to make his mark, so to speak, and wanted to look at redesigning the logo. And they didn't make a case for it. They just seemed to want to do it. So I think one of our jobs is to save our clients from themselves sometimes. And what we did was actually insist that they use it more and more consistently and really brand themselves around their logo more than they had been doing.
That's interesting. So one of your jobs as a creative firm is sometimes to say, no change is called for here.
That's right. That's right.
So I know, speaking of television stations, I know you have looked at Nickelodeon and how Nickelodeon changed its logo. Why did they do that? What'd you think of it?
Well, I think I'm sure they had they're very smart people there, and I'm sure they had a good strategy. I mean, when we originally designed the Nickelodeon logo, we it played off of the idea behind the MTV logo, where you really use the logo as one of your marketing characters. You create some personality around it. No one had really heard of Nickelodeon at the time, so we picked bright orange because no other television network was using it, and it fit the idea of creating a network that was actually for kids. I think as Nickelodeon has grown and become larger and tried to scale into all sorts of different industries, using a logo that had a flexible outer shape, the rule around the Nickelodeon logo was that the type always stayed the same, the color always stayed the same, but the outside shape of it could vary and play. They got, I think, tired of managing that particular system, and they took sort of some elements of the logo and just basically the orange color and decided, this is it, this is our logo, and we'll be creative in other ways.
But it also seems like what we were talking about with Starbucks, where they didn't want to feel trapped by their logo into being just a kids' network, which
right.
they once were.
Right.
Now they're a place where you see reruns of all sorts of classic TV shows. So they became adult in some ways.
Well, I think that, that's right. They spent a lot of time, and we've worked with them on a number of initiatives to try to segment their brand into different areas, into games and sports, into sort of tween. We created a whole brand around tweens that never went anywhere. We created Nick Jr., which was a very successful. We created Nick at Night. TV Land was a spinoff of Nick at Night. So there was a lot of sort of how do we take the same content and reshape it for different audiences. without investing a lot of money.
And Andrea Duff, look forward for us. What do you see increasingly happening with logos as firms become international, as social media takes over, all the sort of forces that we've been talking about, as people increasingly look at things on screens, not on paper? What do you see happening?
Well, I think it's two sides of the same coin. On one hand, there's diligent focus on being simplified so it can translate cross-media, cross-culture, cross-platform. Super attention to color. But on the other hand, it requires much more sophisticated thinking and complexity around thinking about how the logo is going to be executed and applied, and what is the part of my visual vocabulary that's going to live on an app, in a physical environment, on a video, as a bug. So it's simple, but yet it's complicated.
You have to make sure that simplicity, like Nike and Apple, is exactly what you want.
And delivers on the experience you want it to deliver.
We've been talking about logos and how they morph in response to changes in the economy. And I've been speaking with Michael McPherson, creative director, and Andrea Nadaf, partner. They're both at Corey McPherson Nash, a national branding and design firm. Thanks very much to both of you for this conversation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we will continue the innovation conversation with someone who might change the way we use the internet. I'm Kara Miller, and you're listening to 89.7 WGBH.